Hello, Garys. This is Susan Blumert, but my fans call me Mr. Kaplan. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
We are back for a special edition of The Blacklist Exposed. Good day, dearies. I am Agent Troy Heinrichs.
You don't say it very well. And I am Agent Aaron Peterson, excited to bring you a discussion with the late Mr. Kaplan herself, Ms. Susan Blumert. Show notes and intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com. Wow. She is a wonderful person to talk to.
Just amazing. Such a nice lady. And you guys are really going to enjoy this. I'm so glad we were able to have her on the podcast right after the season finale, talk a lot about her time on the show, talks a lot about her career coming up, storied career, and everything that she's accomplished over the years. And just really great that we're able to bring this to you guys. Super, super excited for you to hear it. I think it's going to be a gas.
You just had to get a little blacklist.
One more time. One more time.
This is one of those things, whenever we do an interview, we kind of like discuss what questions we want to ask. And I hate to tell you guys, none of my questions were Blacklist related. She has a great career, and I wanted to talk as much about that as I could. There's lots of Blacklist in here, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, go to her IMDb page, check out Susan's work. She has done so many things, a lot of great work. And I love the fact that she took the time to come on our show and discuss that in detail and take a big portion of her time out to talk about all of these things. It's just really appreciated, and we're really grateful to get her so close to after death. I mean, she'd be prepping for a funeral right now.
The body might not even be cold yet.
It's still probably damp. They just fished it out of the river.
Just rolled over and lived on.
But we do get some nuggets. Like, we find out that, she's fierce. That's all I'm going to say.
We also find out that she is a fabulous New Yorker and just really gives a good... I felt like it was a good feeling of what New York is like for these up-and-coming actors and their careers, and it gives a little bit of history as to work in New York versus work in LA, which I thought was a very interesting insight into how that all went down, especially during her formidable time in the 90s.
There's a lot of great nuggets here. And you know what? You guys didn't tune in to hear us this week. You tuned in to hear Susan, aka Mr. Kaplan. Without further ado, should we get into it, Troy?
Absolutely. Here comes Mr. Kaplan in this week's case profile. We welcome into the Blacklist Exposed, Susan, Mr. Kaplan. How are you, Susan?
I'm great. Nice to be here.
How are you feeling since you hit the water? Everything good? You got pneumonia? Because that's what I'm ruling.
A little wet. A little soggy, but I'm drying out. I'm drying out just well.
That's great. So before we get into everything, the first thing I always ask anyone is, what was the moment for you? And you've had an extensive career. You've been in some great movies, some great TV shows. What was the moment for you when you woke up and said, yes, this is the crazy business, the thing I want to do. I want to be an actor.
It was the first time I was on stage, actually, and I was playing Renfield in a production of a summer theater of Count Dracula. And it was the first time I was on stage. I never thought about being an actor. I was actually a stylist for a photographer in Chicago. And I went to a little summer theater meeting. They just talked about the cast that they needed and the plays they were doing. And I walked up to this young man who was directing Count Dracula, and I said, did you ever think about casting a woman in that role? The character was Renfield, who is basically a minion of Count Dracula, who is in an asylum and eats flies. Mm-hmm. So what possessed me to go up to him and ask that question, I to this day don't know. But he said, that's an interesting idea. Why don't you audition? So I did. And that literally was the beginning of my career. I went on stage and I thought, oh, I like this. This is interesting. It's really great to make people laugh. And I just thought, well, why not? But by this time I was already like mid-20s. I had a few careers before this. Mm-hmm. So I just started studying. As a matter of fact, the first acting class I ever took was school called the St. Nicholas School that David Mamet and William H. Macy started in Chicago years and years ago. Mm-hmm. And I took my first acting class with William H. Macy. So that's a good start.
Yeah, I would say.
So that's the moment I had done a lot of other things in my life by that time already. And I thought it's rare to just fall into something that you think, I would really like to do this. However, I had no idea about the business. If I knew about the business, not sure I would have had the guts to go through with it. But I learned that the hard way, the business, which is a tough one. Mm-hmm. But I've never regretted the step, ever.
Let me ask you, because you have, I mean, if you look at your credits, it's astonishing. You have some great credits, great work. And I'm kind of curious, for you, you talk about the hardships of the business. For people that don't understand how the business works, what does that mean for you? I mean, what's so difficult as a working actor to do? Is it to make your mark, to continue to work? What's the hardest part?
Well, I think all of the above, actually. But initially, it's just difficult to get seen, to be seen, to get an audition. So initially, when I was growing up, which was, we won't say how many years ago it was, but a number of years ago, you auditioned for everything. You could go to an open call for Equity. You could be seen by people. You would do showcases for absolutely nothing. As a matter of fact, sometimes you even had to pay to like get there and back. You just did whatever you could to try to get out there and be exposed. And one of the hardest things then was to get an agent, because the only way to get into anything legitimate that would pay you was to have an agent who submitted you for that. So it was a struggle. I think there are some wonderful, wonderful acting schools, and if you go to some of those, if you're lucky enough, those are you have a little leg up on that score, because they usually have a network of getting you out there and seen a little bit from the beginning of your career. Mm-hmm. But because I was late at it and didn't really have any contacts, it took a while for that. So tenacity is certainly imperative in the business, I think. Mm-hmm. And after a while, you know, I mean, I'm so old that people just, you know, decide to do something else instead, and there's sometimes fewer of us standing. Makes it a little easier at this stage of my life. But it's a fabulous career, as I say, not an easy one, but a great one. And I've had a lot of luck and a lot of great, great people to work with in my life.
Well, one thing in particular, and it would be a shame for myself if I didn't even bother to ask, but I'm a huge Pet Sematary fan. And since you played Missy Dandridge in the film, I'm kind of curious what your experience was like, because you're in that rare good Stephen King movie of the, like, there weren't any other good Stephen King movies in the 80s, and that's one of them.
You know, I had a wonderful time doing that movie. I really did. We shot it in Maine. Mm-hmm. It was in the summer. It was stunningly beautiful to be there. He was around, Stephen King was around the set, because he was, you know, it's where he lives. And he does a wonderful thing, really, with his film. He often kind of makes a stipulation about shooting in Maine, which brings in business and helps support the people in the state, which is not the most wealthy state in the country. Mm-hmm. So that's really pretty great of him to do. But it was, Mary Lambert directed it. We had a great time. Fred Gwynn was, it was thrilling to meet him and thrilling to work with him. And he and I talked about our Maine accent and stuff like that. But he was a real charmer and a beautiful person to know and to work with. So I had a great time. And, you know, in that movie, I was lucky enough to hang myself before, as they say, the literal you-know-what hit the fan when it got really ugly with the kids and the cats and the animals and all the things you hold precious that they were destroying in that movie. I kind of was able to get out of the movie early on, and I was able to put yet another death on what I think is going to be called my death reel pretty soon. I've had a few deaths on screen, so I think I might just make a little snippet reel of that sometime.
And have your manager send that out? Hey, look, she's great at this.
Hey, this girl knows how to die. Well, I've also killed a little bit in my time, so I guess it all balances out. Between the killing and the being killed. But I guess, like, let's see. That was one of my first ones, was The Hanging. And then I was pitchforked to death by Patricia Arquette in a Tales from the Crypt episode. That was fun.
Oh, the triangle one, right?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. You boys do know everything, don't you?
I'm a big fan. Yeah. I'm a big fan of stuff. I like stuff and entertainment.
I can tell that. Yeah, that was great. So that's one of them. Let me think. Well, I've had a few in the blacklist already, I guess. I could put a few, at least attempts, if nothing else. So I guess I am creating a reel, a death reel. Now, if I add my killing reel, that could get a little too long, I think.
Yeah, well, let's keep adding to that. I like that. I think Kaplan might have survived, and she's going to come back and just kill everybody next year. Nobody, not the main cast, just all the accessory characters.
All the accessories, yes. Well, that would be fun, wouldn't it?
Well, what's this journey been like for you? I mean, you've worked with some of the best talent in the business. I mean, you have a great, like, seriously, people, go look at her IMDb page, go look at her credits. She's got an extensive list. Is there anything that really stands out to you in your career that, wow, this is some of my best, other than The Blacklist, obviously. We'll get to The Blacklist here shortly.
Yeah, well, there are things that I've loved doing, some of them on stage, certainly. That's just a different experience, a different world when you're live. I mean, I did a wonderful play at ACT a couple years ago that was a highlight at that point in my life. Mm-hmm. Just a great play, great part, great cast. A lot of my fondest memories of working over the years is just the people I've been lucky enough to work with. You know, I've worked with some really amazing people. And I have to say that most of them, even the really, really, really big stars, and I've worked with some of those, incredibly generous people, I have to say. Shirley MacLaine, who I worked with, taught me, watching her just taught me so much. Meryl Streep, who was amazingly generous and wonderful, that I worked with in Doubt.
Love her.
You know, just, I mean, amazing people who just to work with them really raises the bar, you know? I mean, you better do your best stuff when you're around people who are that good. And I've been lucky enough to be around a few of them, and they've been very generous to me. Shirley MacLaine taught me how to find my mark. Because I kept, like, going, it's when you have to find a mark, when you're working with camera, you have to hit a mark so that all the camera focuses can be right. And I always, like, think, how do you do that besides, you know, walking forward and then you have to look down to see where your mark is, which, of course, is obvious. And she said, Susan, you know, she called me, she said, okay, so you start where you're starting and then you count. Count it out, then go back and do it again, and that's how you find your mark. I was like, wow. I mean, simple, but somebody needed to tell me that, and she was generous enough to do that.
Yeah, I can imagine. There's probably I don't want to make assumptions, but I'm sure there's a lot of actors that don't do that with actors that are coming up, where they show them, here's what you need to do to get better at this kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as I say, my experiences with most of the people I worked with have been that they're almost sometimes the more talented they are, the more generous they are. It's kind of across the board. I'm not even thinking of anybody that I couldn't say that about, especially. I guess I'm lucky. I guess I'm just lucky on that score, because I certainly know that there are people who can be difficult. You hear about it, you know, people talk about it in the business. But just working with James Spader, who is bloody brilliant, amazingly generous, just thrilling to work with. Mm-hmm. And just kind of, you have to step up to the plate with people like that. And it's what makes your work better all the time. So I'm fortunate on that score.
Well, they say you have to give to get. So I assume you're giving the same in return. So
it is that kind of, like, the minute you feel that from another actor, you just go there. You know, I mean, the minute you feel that focus and that commitment, that's what you thrive on. That's what you work on. That's what makes something work, to me, is that kind of communication between people in a scene. So that is, hopefully they're getting something as well.
What is the deal with you and judges? Because I went through and tried to count them all.
What is that deal?
What is it?
That saved my life. I have to say that saved my life as far as being able to continue to be an actor, the judge role. Because when I first got a judge on Law & Order, which was, at that point and for many years, the only game in town. It was the only TV show, practically, other than soaps, that was shot for a long time in New York City. And so if you were lucky enough to get on that show, that was great. And I was lucky enough to be a judge who could recur on that show. So I forget how many episodes I did of The Mothership, and then I did a few of the other, you know, every once in a while here and there. I also did quite a few judges on The Practice. During a period of time when there wasn't a lot of work, and The Practice was always shot in California, and I actually was lucky enough to get on that show. I used to go out to California during the 90s to look for TV work to kind of keep surviving, because it's tough when you come from a theater, which is my base, to make a living if you're not a triple threat person. And I have been in a few musicals in my time, but it's not my, I'm not anywhere, not even double threat on that score. But anyway, I used to, you know, I would go out there, and the woman that I had done, that had worked on the, on Law and Order in New York, was working, was directing an episode of The Practice, and she called me in to audition, and I got that. And that's how I got to be a recurring on The Practice for a while as well. But it was really during a period of time where work was scarce, especially in this, in New York City. So going back and forth was helpful, because I would pick up stuff in L.A. and then I would go back to New York and vice versa. But the judges saved my life. And then I guess I just got too old for a judge. I don't know. not that judges don't get old. Some of the ones we have today are up there. Some of our better ones are up there, that's for sure. But, you know, it was nice to be able to move on from that. I have to say, they served me well. Hopefully I served them well. And I always had, it was strange that when I think about it, I always kind of had, I think my judge's name on The Practice was Rudy Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it was, that was the character name that they had come up with, but then they decided to cast me, so then I became a woman. But they never changed the plaque on, you know, so it was the name on the bench. So I became Rudy Fox. So not the first time I played someone who has a male name.
Well, I would say the first time I saw you on The Blacklist, because my wife and I love Law and Order. It's shameful. I'm proud. I don't know what it is. It's one of those things.
No, I love it too. It's classic.
It's like TV crack.
Absolutely. Now is that people say, "Oh, I saw you on Law and Order," and I'm like, "Fabulous! You saw me when I was so much younger. I'm so glad."
I did. You came up. You were a judge, and we were watching. You know, because I think TNT or whoever it is, USA, I think whoever it is, have the reruns on all the time. And we would watch those in succession, especially Special Victims Unit. And I think that's the one you came up on.
I think I did that once. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I think that's the one, because it was like, oh, that's Kaplan. You know, and it's one of
the. Pretty sure I did one of the Special Victims Unit and one of the spinoffs that didn't quite make it. I think it was called Criminal Justice. Not Criminal Intent, but one with justice. It was. It's about much more about the law end of the spectrum, but I don't know that survived for too long. But that was fun too. But anyway, that one actually I had to go and audition for, and I was in after doing, like, you know, judges all over the place. I actually had to go in and read for that judge, and I do recall being in the room with a lot of men. I was like, okay, read.
You should be an honorary judge by now, honestly.
Yeah, I think I should at least be a Supreme Court judge, don't you think? I mean, I should have some exactly. Sort of like life sentence, I guess. But anyway, that was those were good gigs, I have to say.
I hear there's an opening.
Oh, good. Or maybe not good, depending on.
Yeah, well,
we won't go. We won't get into that. Wise of us. Yes.
That's funny.
Well, I'm curious on your perspective there, Susan, because you said there wasn't a lot of work back in the 90s, and now we're in this golden age of 500 scripted shows on television today.
Yes.
Is it almost too much for you guys? Like, how do you even know what to audition for? Because there's just so much good stuff out there.
You know, I have to say that I greedily don't think there's ever going to be too much. I mean, there's so many of us out there. You know what I mean? There really are so many of us, and so few roles for the amount of as much TV that it, you know, fabulous stuff that's going on right now, and I agree with that. There are still a lot of us out there to audition. You know, you're never the first or only one auditioning for something. So I think it's just wonderful that there's more work for people. And it's fabulous that there's such good stuff going on. You know, mm-hmm. really great writing, some just amazing acting. It's exciting. It's an exciting time. Hope it stays around for a while.
If you had to pick a show besides The Blacklist, what's your favorite one on scripted television right now?
Ooh.
Ah.
I must make a confession that I don't watch a lot of television.
That's probably a good thing. That's probably a good thing.
You learned it from James, right? Since he doesn't own a television.
Right. Yeah, I don't. I mean, there are shows that I think are wonderful that I've seen some of, but I don't watch enough to, like, have something that's coming to me that I watch every single week. You know, sometimes I'll catch up on something. I watch a lot of PBS, I have to tell you.
Well, it sounds like you love theater. So what tell us about you. I mean, what plays do you watch and what do you read and stuff like that?
Well, interestingly, I don't read plays unless I'm up for one and I'm reading it to audition or I'm mm-hmm. reading it to work on to memorize or something or rehearsal. I used to do a lot more of that, but I haven't done that in a while. And I haven't been on stage for a while, partially because of the wonderful gig of The Blacklist. It makes it a little difficult to be doing a play. Mm-hmm. Their schedule does not allow you to also be in doing theater. I'm looking forward at some point to getting back on those boards because I miss it. It kind of feeds you every once in a while. I feel like I need to get back there. Kind of light at the home base, you know.
Do you get out and see other plays? Do you see other plays that are out there? Anything catching your eye right now?
Well, I do. I mean, as a matter of fact, last night I went to see a really good friend of mine who I have not been able to see, who's doing On Your Feet, which is the musical, which is, I went because she's a good friend of mine, and I had a really good time dancing around to the beat, and what was really kind of funny is how many people recognized me from The Blacklist in the theater. You would think it would be a slightly different audience, but I guess, you know, people will get their entertainment wherever they can. I've been kind of busy this last few months to be able to see much of anything. So mm-hmm. in fact, I'm planning on hopefully seeing some of the stuff and catching up on stuff that I'd like to see in the next few months at any rate. Would be great. And then I might start looking for something that I can do. It's a good time to look for something, you know. It's all TV is on most of it's on hiatus at the moment, so summer is a good time to kind of be able to get your feed from the theater.
Well, one more question before we get into The Blacklist. I always wonder, you mentioned that you were on The Practice. For actors, when you do so many roles, and a lot of actors will end up working together again, that sort of thing. So you've worked with Spader before, and I'm sure you've worked with many other actors in repeated work. Is it familiar when you do that? Is it completely fresh because it's a different role? I mean, how does that work for you as an actor? Is it like meeting old friends or?
You know, off work, off the set, or, you know, off stage, if there are people you work with before, it's just old friends, you know. If you're on stage and you're doing a whole different ball game, that's what that ball game is. You will focus on who you are at that moment because that's your job. Mm-hmm. But if you're not actually working at the moment, it is just wonderful to work with old friends again. The business becomes, especially if you do a long, you know, like I've been doing The Blacklist for 4 seasons, so that becomes family, you know. And a play mm-hmm. almost always becomes family because you've got at least 2 months of being together all the time. Usually at least 2 months of, like, you know, 4 weeks or so of rehearsal and at least 4 weeks of performance, depending if it's a success, it goes longer, or if the contract is longer, it goes longer. But it becomes a family. So it's always like having a reunion when you get to work with people again.
So obviously James was on The Practice with you. How does that transition then? How did you end up hearing about The Blacklist? What was that audition like?
Well, I never worked with him on The Practice. So I had not met James before I did The Blacklist.
Oh, interesting.
That's funny.
I would assume you would have totally been trying a case in your courtroom at the same time.
Well, what was the thing of the Boston Legal, which was the which kind
the spin-off.
Of came from the practice.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I was never on that show. So, and just happens that however many episodes I did of the practice, I never had anything. I never met him. So that wasn't a reunion. That was a lovely first encounter when I met him.
Aw, that's very sweet.
I mean, I've always been a huge fan of his work, so it was really exciting to think that I was going to get to work with him. Little did I know I would work with him as much as I did, which has been a true joy, I have to say.
And try to kill him. So you got that, too.
And try to kill him, yeah. And try to kill him, and he tries to kill me, and, you know, that's family for you.
Yep, that is family.
So how did you learn, so how did you get the role then? Did a casting find you, or were you looking for came to it yourself?
I auditioned for Mr. Kaplan. Yep.
Oh, nice.
I got a call from my agent. I was in my house that's a little upstate from New York City, and I got on the bus. You know, TV, you have very little time, you know, that you don't, it's not like you've got days of prep to go in and read for something. Usually, I think I got it maybe a day or so before I had to go and audition for it. So I was looking at it. You really have to make pretty quick decisions of what you want to do with something because you don't have a lot of time. I immediately felt I knew who this was. I had like three pages of the sides, what they call sides, which are the little tidbits that they will give you of a script. That's the scene you're going to read for the audition. I had not seen it. I had no idea. You know, I had watched, I watched the first episode of it because I always watch the first of a show that's shot, especially in New York City, if I have to go in. In case I have to go into audition for it, I'll have an idea of the tenor of the show and what the show is like. So I had watched the first episode, and I thought, oh, this is fabulous. And, you know, he's brilliant. It's fabulous. And then I watched the second episode, and it was so violent. And I've done a lot of violence in my time as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Really have a hard time watching it myself. It's like you put me in a dark theater with a violent movie, and I'm going to just shut my eyes for the whole thing. So I'm really bad about that. I have to.
Really? You know how it all works and everything.
I can do it. I can do almost anything that's violent. I don't mind doing it. For some reason, if I'm doing it, and I know how real and unreal that is, you know, but I am a sucker audience when you put me, you know, in front of a screen. I'll just go right there and be totally terrified. So I had watched the second episode, and that was pretty violent. I think it was when Tom's, like, getting tortured by somebody or whatever, and I was like, okay, that's it. Obviously, I can never watch that show again. It's just too violent for me. So I had an idea of the show, but I got this call. I got on the bus to go down into the city, and I went to the casting office with many other people, walked in, had my, well, they taped the audition, read with a casting person. And I thought, okay, you know, I mean, I thought the audition went okay, went pretty well, but, you know, I've auditioned a lot of my time. I had a lot of things I didn't get. So you leave and you just hope you did the best you can do, and that's that. So I got back on the bus. I got a call from my agent on the bus saying, well, they're very interested in you for Mr. Kaplan, and if it did work out, you have to work tomorrow. I was like, I'm on the bus on the way going back upstate. What do you mean? He was like, well, but they're not, you know, they're not making a decision. So like at 7 o'clock that night, I finally get a call, and they say, they want you to do the part. So you're working tomorrow. I literally had to grab some clothes, get back on the bus, and try to start learning these lines on the way. Then they sent me the script. That's when they sent me the script. But the sides I had were, I think, the scene where you first meet Mr. Kaplan, when I come in to help Liz has killed the apple man, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes in to clean that up and make sure she's safe, and Raymond has been abducted, and she's trying to find him. I literally was working. That was the scene I read for, so I had an idea of who it was. But I was working that first episode the next day, and how fabulous it was, and I had no idea. I had no idea that there was going to be life after, you know. I thought, well, maybe I'd do an episode or two.
Now, in that moment, though, you don't know that you're the nanny. So what's the... Talk about the evolution of the character. Like, when did you know the backstory versus how much did you have to shape on your own?
Yeah, what's fascinating about this show, in particular, I'm saying that because it's the one we're talking about and the one I know, it's so fast how they have to write these episodes. You know, they're really by the seat of their pants as far as timing goes. It's a lot of script to write that many in that short amount of time. So you often don't get the script until like the day before you're going to shoot something anyway. If you're, you know, sometimes a few days before, that's nice. But they're very quiet about what is going to happen. They don't. And I learned pretty quickly after the first few episodes that I was probably going to be playing this role without knowing really who I was. I kind of thought that that was exciting, that it was an interesting way to work on this by just having to some degree, create my own backstory, which I did. You kind of have to do that because you need some place to let it, you need some place to come from. So we usually create some sort of a backstory for ourselves so you have something to jump off of. So I had done some of that for myself. And every once in a while, a scene or something would come up in an episode where I'd go, oh, okay, a little tidbit. But I was loath to ask too many questions because I found it kind of thrilling. It was a little like working, I don't know, it was a little tightrope walking feeling to it, which made it exciting. And I kind of started enjoying that part of it. The mystery of it, even for myself, and then just jumping to, this is how I'm going to play this. And I thought, okay, someone will tell me if this is wrong, if it's not working. or if it is, then we'll just go on to the next scene. And mostly, I guess it was working. So it's been exciting on that score of not quite knowing. I didn't know the backstory until I read the backstory.
Wow.
I mean, I knew a little bit of, I had made up a lot of stuff, but some of the stuff that I read in that was close to what I had gleaned from doing as many episodes as I had done by that time. And as much as they were saying, this is who Mr. Kaplan is, every once in a while you get an idea. I mean, I knew the deep relationship. There was a really deep relationship with Red Reddington that had gone back years. You know, there were mm-hmm. things in all the episodes, you know, building up to that. But the backstory and some of the wonderful, fabulous things I wrote in that backstory were as surprising to me as anybody else.
What was the backstory you came up with then? I'm curious.
Well, I just, you know, just little things for myself of like who I was, and I'm not going to share that.
Come on!
No. No, that's my secret.
All right.
That will always be my secret. But it fueled some of the stuff I did, you know, how I played something. I had reasons of my own. Perhaps they were right, perhaps they were wrong. But, you know, things have to be somewhat legitimate for you to be able to play them in a real way. So you kind of find whatever truth you need to make it work for you.
What's the over-under? How close were you to the real thing? You want to tell us? Okay, fine. But how close were you in the neighborhood? Zip code? Area code?
I was... In some aspects of the backstory, I was, you know, within a zip code or two. Some of the things were a total surprise. I mean, why I was called Mr. Kaplan was a beautiful surprise.
That was a great story.
I mean, I thought it was simple. It was, you know, it was just, I don't know, it was simple, it was tragic, it was right. It just, there was something that I thought, wow, that's nice writing. What I thought when I read it. That was a really, really good script. Of the many that they do, I think that was a special one. And of course, I would be a little prejudiced on that score, but...
When did you start getting the feeling that this character is becoming bigger? And I will say, this show does a great thing that a lot of TV shows don't do, which is when they see that a character is sticking with the audience, or it's, you know, an actor is working great in the role, they really try to play to that in the story. When did you start getting a sense that Kaplan is becoming a lot bigger than you expected?
Well, certainly in season four. Certainly in this last season.
Right.
I was like, whoa, okay, whoa. That's way bigger than I ever thought this would be. I mean, I kind of knew after, I mean, I don't even remember how many episodes I did in season one, two, three, maybe something like that. I don't remember actually. Because I came in, you know, it wasn't the very beginning of the season, of season one. I came in after quite a few episodes, as I recall. I kind of sensed after like four or five that this would be a character that had some significance to his life and was helpful in a lot of ways and could function in different ways for information that was needed or for ways of handling things or how things were done. So I assumed that I would probably have a little bit of a recurring thing going on, which was fabulous. But it really wasn't until season four that I thought, wow, this is turning into a bigger thing than I ever expected. And it did.
How about fan reaction? When did you start seeing, wow, this is really starting to pick up?
As much as I don't watch a lot of television, I'm not on Facebook. I actually did a little tweet thing a week ago. I had never done that before. I hate to say this to you guys because you are like so fabulous at that stuff, but I don't. It's mostly friends of mine who will mm-hmm. tell me, oh my God, all these people are talking about Mr. Kaplan, but I kind of am not privy to it as much myself because I'm not on those social media thing. Partially because I'm, you know, kind of don't even know how to do it, and partially because I don't want to.
Right.
I don't want to. Part of me thinks if I ever started doing it, I would get just sucked down into the black hole and never come back. You know, so I'm like better to just not. So I mean, I know enough, and now I'm starting to be recognized enough. That happened this year, where I would just go shopping and someone would recognize me, and I thought, okay, that's when I knew. You know, that people would come up to me in the department store. Or last night when I was in the theater, the people behind me said, we love that show. You're wonderful. I was like, yikes. So that's thrilling. That's really thrilling. But that's kind of how I knew that it was bigger than I ever thought it would be.
Do you have a weird fan moment? One that's like stands out in your mind is, gosh, I never thought this situation would happen. Either a weird or cool moment where they spotted you on the street.
I actually had a couple of them. One was a young woman was walking. I was walking from an audition, actually, in New York City to the Port Authority bus terminal, and she was walking the other way. And we were both doing that kind of like, I'm in a hurry. I know where I'm going. I've got to get there. I'm going to be late kind of walk, right? So, and it's New York City, so there's all kinds of people around anyway. And you walk with purpose, and I was doing that, and she was doing that. And as we passed each other, I saw that she looked at me, and so I looked over at her, and then we just kept walking as fast as we were. And all of a sudden, I hear, yo, yo. And I knew somehow that she was talking to me. So I turned, and she was like, yeah, you are fierce. She screams at me. But we're practically now, you know, at least a half a block away from each other. She said, yeah, you are fierce. So that was kind of a thrilling moment just to have someone say that out loud, yell it out loud, and also that it was kind of a young woman who thought this old lady character was pretty fierce, which I thought was very cool and has everything to do with the writers, with the Johns and all the writers on that show to create a character, an old lady character that young people would think is very cool and pretty badass. So I liked that. One other one is I was in a large store, Century 21, as a matter of fact, in New York, and I had just gone out with my hair pulled back, no makeup on, just one of those 95-degree days in New York City, and I needed to find something to wear for something, and so I thought, oh, I'm just going to go down there and see if I can find something. So I did, and I'm standing in line waiting to purchase it, and there are three women standing in front of me in veils. They're speaking a language I don't understand, and I'm not paying much attention, just waiting for them to go up, and I'm going to go next, and then I can leave. And there were two young women and an older woman, and one of them is on the two of them are on the phone, on their iPhones, or whatever phones they had. Mm-hmm. And one of them just pulls the phone away from her, pushes it toward me, and says, "You're Mr. Kaplan," with a picture of me on her phone.
That's great.
And I said, yes. And they were like, "Can we take a picture?" I said, "Maybe if I could get a headscarf, because I look so horrible, you can take a picture." And we all laughed at that, because obviously they spoke English. We all laughed at that. But as unattractive as I may have looked, I did a selfie with them. So that was really fun. But I loved that. That was just that picture of Mr. Kaplan coming at me going, "You're Mr. Kaplan." So it's like, it's an incredible range of fan base for that show, you know?
Mm-hmm. Like, very, very much so.
Bigger than I would have ever thought. So,
and you actually got attacked by yourself then, really.
Uh-huh.
In theory.
Yeah, in theory. Yeah, those are just two of the ones that came up when you asked me that question that I just, you know, was really flattered by that. I'm surprised. I mean, I've done a lot of stuff, but I'm always surprised if people recognize me, because I usually do really little things here and there, you know, so this has become a bigger thing that more people recognize me, obviously. And the show is certainly a fan favorite. I can tell that from the amount of people that talk about it. But those two were two of my favorites, just my own experience of people recognizing me and surprising me in doing so. It was fun.
Speaking of hair and makeup then, you had one of these greatest scenes in season 4 this year was the scene that happens after you get shot by Red.
Yeah.
You're laying there in the mud. Go through the process first of what is it like to have to get all the visual effects and the makeup and all of that done to prep for a scene like that, and then kind of walk through the scene itself, how you prepped for it and actually shot it. Because I believe that was you laying in the mud, correct?
You mean the aftermath? Yeah, yeah. The aftermath of that, yeah. Well, the hair and makeup teams, departments on that show are just fabulous. They're really good at what they do, and they're really wonderful to work with. So, and they're always surprising, and they come, I mean, the makeup job of the post-shooting, it just was fabulous. It was so well done. So my sitting in the chair and watching them create that, and it is a creation, if you ask me, it's real talent it takes to do that. And so sitting there watching what I was going to look like was extremely helpful for taking me there. And then there was a stunt person, woman, who's lovely, by the way. We worked together a few times on this show. And she was there to do the crawling through the muck and mire. But I said, I'd like to do this myself. I thought, why not? I mean, how often since you were a baby do you get to, like, crawl through the mud and not be yelled at, you know? So, so I just kind of just got down on my hands and knees and dragged myself through it, literally through the mud and onto the rock. One of my favorite moments, and it was really informative for me to be able to play that and then the rest of the scene in the cabin and stuff of what that, you know, where we had gone to as far as physically, certainly, and emotionally. One of my favorite things, though, of that scene was the fabulous dog that almost literally knocked me off that rock, because they would what they did, which was great, is the ball was that dog, fabulous, huge, big black dog, and had, you know, there's trainers, and what they did is he loved tennis balls, and we put a tennis ball in my armpit, and then when they let him go, he would try to get the tennis ball. So he would come right to me, but he weighed more than me, at least, I'd say, a few pounds more than I did. And at one point, he almost knocked me off that rock, and I just had everything I could do to not start laughing. It was really, really funny. I mean, he was a gentle giant, you know, I was not afraid of him at all, but it was kind of fun, and I thought the tennis ball was genius.
has everything gone the way that you thought it was going to go? I mean, is there anything that really, what was the biggest shock, I guess, for the season for you?
The biggest shock for the season? Oof. There were a couple big shocks. But the biggest shock, I think, was for me, was when I learned from the script that I was going to help fake her death, Elizabeth's death. Because I knew full well, by that time I had done the show long enough, felt I knew the relationship and the character of Red Reddington and the relationship with Kate Kaplan. I knew that that was not going to be a good thing to do. I knew that there was going to be major repercussions. So for me, it was almost, and because I never quite knew what was going to happen, script-wise, story-wise, I just was waiting. Every script, I was kind of waiting. How are they going to work this? How are they going to resolve, you know, what's going to happen? How long is it going to take? That was probably the most surprising, the beginning of that trajectory into where we went to. And then the other surprise was then my becoming kind of the big bad of the season. And the transition into that was surprising and difficult. And difficult to play.
How so?
Well, difficult to find one's way. I mean, I was as invested as any fan in the character of Mr. Kaplan and her relationship to Red Reddington and to Liz. I was as invested as anybody else that watched that show and was a fan. So when I realized that I was going to have to go a different route, that became a challenge of how I was going to do that. I mean, the script started coming that made all of that start to make sense. But each time I had to work my way into that place where my hand went, no, I can't work with you anymore. I can't help you anymore. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do everything to make sure that you can't do what you do anymore. And that was a really interesting and challenging road to take. I hope that we all pulled it off, but...
Oh, absolutely.
It was, you know, it was challenging. It's fabulous to have that kind of challenge or that kind of writing. And one of the things I think that did work for me, usually I like to know everything I'm doing, but because I kind of early on thought, I think I won't ask too many questions. I think I'll just see what happens if I just throw myself into the pool, you know? And I think that that was really a helpful way for me to be able to go through those transitions of character.
And one other thing is that, actually Megan Boone pointed this out when she came by the podcast, that the one thing that actors on the show are asked probably the most are, what's it like working with James? So I kind of want to ask you, what's it like working with everyone else? We know James is great. You've already alluded to that. So what is the like working with the rest of the other cast and most likely saying goodbye, at least it seems that way?
As I said earlier, when we were talking about working with people, and that it really does become, they did become a family for me. Now, certainly there were, I didn't work as much with the task force people as I did with, certainly with James and with Hisham as Dembe. I mean, that was who I worked with most until this season. But I certainly had times that I worked with them and we got to know each other. First of all, I worked with Harry in a movie that I mentioned when I talked about doing a movie with Shirley MacLaine. We did a movie years and years ago.
Is that Guarding Tess?
Yes. And Amir, who plays Aram, or Aram, who plays Amir. Their names are so close together, I can't even think now who's right and who's the character. We did a play at Yale many, many years ago together. So two of those people I knew from another life. Those were like, as you were saying, coming, you know, having a reunion, coming home to actors you had worked with before. It had been years since I'd worked with them, but those emotions and those connections don't go away. They're pretty solid. And the minute you see each other again, you're, you know, right back where you started, I think. So that was really, really great. But it has become a family to me. It certainly has. And I've enjoyed working with all of them, I have to say. Really have. It's been, I've never not had a good time on that set with anyone I'm acting with. Been a real pleasure and a real, and really good work. Really good. Working with good people is just great. It's the best. Mm-hmm. It's the best you can hope for in this business, you know. And they're a real solid group of people to work with. So, and as because I have been able to do so many seasons, I have at least had some opportunity to work with all of them. So that's been cool.
So we had a few fan questions then. I love this one from Shannon Helsip. She said, "I Will Survive has become a theme song for Mr. Kaplan." So if you, Susan, had a theme song for your life, what would it be?
Oh, my goodness. I Will Survive.
It's a good choice.
That's handy. That works.
Yeah. And, you know, it's good. I mean, when I heard that, I was like, that's fabulous. They always, their music choices are just brilliant on the show. Absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely.
Always gives you clues to what's going on, but that's almost always right on the money. I've always liked the song, and I think I'm going to now take it as my as my theme song. Thank you, Shannon.
The updated hard rock version, I'm assuming, right? From Cake?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Robin Levine wants to ask, what was your most favorite and least favorite thing about playing Mr. Kaplan?
My most favorite thing, it's hard, that's a hard one to ask, because like I really think it's an incredibly fabulous character. And I don't know, I think my most favorite thing about her is that she's kind of an old lady who's a real badass. My favorite thing.
What about least?
I don't have an unfavorite thing. I think she's pretty fabulous. And I think she always thought she was right. So I don't have a bad thing.
Did you like being holed up in the mountain cabin with Mr. Hunter?
Mr. Hunter is a brilliant actor, and we had a great time in that cabin, I have to tell you.
Leon Rippey is so good.
Oh, my God. He's so good, and he's such a wonderful person. We had a really great time shooting those scenes. We were sorry that we... I was really sorry that I blew him up. I was like, no! Leon, I want to work with you again, but hopefully we'll work together again someday. Yeah, he's a joy.
Speaking of Stephen King, going back to that for a minute, with Leon Rippey, if you haven't seen 11/22/63, he plays the character of Harry Dunning in Stephen King's Time Travel over on Hulu, and he is so good in that role. It's exactly how I envisioned.
Okay, I have to watch. I'm going to watch that. Okay. All right. No, I haven't seen that, and I will. I'd see anything that man was in. He's really, really good.
So speaking of being fabulous, Linda Chaney said, first of all, there's never been a character played better at being a cleaner than you in a white linen suit.
I loved that suit. Got full of blood on one of the, I think that was, I know what scene she's talking about. I think that was when I come in the airplane hangar, when I clean up, when I bring the big chainsaw out of my Mercedes.
Yes,
that's what she's talking about. That was fabulous. Yeah, the wardrobe, you know, all the departments on the show are just, they're so good at what they do. And they've always made me look really great. Very helpful for character, too. You know, we trust and depend a lot on our costumes, and they did a really good job. Yeah.
Her question, though, for you is, go through your emotional expressions as you were reading the bridge scene for the first time.
Well, as I said earlier, each script I wondered, as I say, once the shocker for me of knowing that I was going to be complicit in something that he would consider a betrayal, I knew that there was going to be a price. I had already paid some of those prices, I think, with the shooting, etc. But I knew once the war started that, you know, all's fair in love and war, and this was certainly love and war. So I think I might have just gone, here it is.
Did you ever expect them to write in a suicide, a swan dive off of the top?
No, that was a surprise. Yep, that was a surprise. As they keep coming, those surprises on the blacklist. So sometimes, you know, we know them not much sooner than you do as an audience. That was a surprise. But I think that is what I thought. here it is. It was a surprise, but by this time of working on the show, I was not surprised by a surprise. And often looked forward to them. They made you think, and they made you feel, and that's the point.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
Yeah,
that's a tough one. I was kind of hoping you were going to be all coy and sly about it and just say, oh, yeah, we're good until you got off the bridge. But it didn't work out that way.
No, I jumped.
You sure did.
Yep. I didn't jump. But somebody did jump off that bridge. That was amazing.
Like actually into the water?
Yep.
I thought it would be like a giant pad or something.
I met a stunt woman who actually jumped off that bridge, and that was a really high bridge.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. Wow is right. I thought the very same thing. It was pretty, they do some pretty intense stunt stuff on that show, and they're not shy about it. They really go for it, so.
That's amazing.
I made sure that when we broke for dinner, I made sure I found her and ate our lunch together. Yeah.
Well, and if she survived, I'm just saying, in theory, it's possible. it's possible.
Mm. Plausible.
Mm. Plausible. Mm. Plausible.
Well, she did have a cable.
That's true. That helps. True. That's
they
true.
Were safe. I mean, they're very, you know, they do really go for it, their stunts, but they are amazingly safe.
That's good.
The set is a very safe set. Yeah, I've never worried about anything on that set, and I've watched a lot of their stuff, and they really know what they're doing.
Emily Whitneck, I hope I said that right, Emily, wants to know, we found a lot about Kaplan's backstory with Liz's mother. Did anything surprise you in that reveal, and what did you think about it?
I thought it was really smartly done. I thought that whole script and the whole backstory of that job, that relationship, was so well written and so well thought out that I think that when I read that, I was just going along for the ride. It was like reading a really good novel, you know. It was like, mm-hmm. I think I went through, I had to go through the script again to kind of like think, okay, what does this mean? How am I going to approach this? Blah, blah, blah. But when I first read that script of Reunion, I read through that like it page turner. I thought it was a great reveal and a really beautiful meshing of stories and character and understanding of who I was, where I came from.
Veronica Barker said, in what ways do you, Susan, identify with Mr. Kaplan, and in what ways are you completely opposite?
Well, sometimes I'm a real badass, and sometimes I'm a real wuss. That's the only way I know how to answer that.
It's a great answer.
I have a little of her, and I have, you know, and there are parts of her that I wouldn't know how to touch. But it was it's really fun playing her, I'll tell you that.
Well, it's true, too, because if you remember back in season one, I think it was, there was an episode where you came in to clean up a body and the body was still alive.
I know exactly what you're going to say. I remember thinking about that because later on, I think I did some, I don't know, maybe it was the first time I shot someone. And I thought, oh, I remember that. That, like, just covering up my, like, because that was, you know, that was kind of Kaplan and a little bit of me. I was like, oh, no, I wouldn't really want to see all that blood come flying at me.
Raymond, this one's still wiggling.
That's so funny that you caught. You don't really have an eye, don't you, darling? No. Yeah, that was fun. Also, it was a little harder to play as much, but you know, there's also wonderful humor in that show, in the Blacklist, you know. And every once in a while, I'd get something that I could, you know, just had a little bit of that going to it, which I always loved. So that was fun. Got a little darker and darker as we went along, but we would pull out whatever fun moment we could or whatever way we could say something that would be a little amusing when there was a chance to do it. But that's part of, I think, the great part of that show, too, is the amount of humor that's in it.
Absolutely. Rachel Towns wants to know if her and if you, Kaplan and Red, could have had a truce, how do you feel like the relationship could have been repaired if possible?
I think you have to ask the writers that question.
Yeah, that's where I would go.
I could make up whatever I want, but I think you'd have to ask them that question. They'd be the only ones that could come up with a legitimate way to do that within all the trajectories they have in mind, I guess.
Ice cream is always the answer, is how I look at it.
Ice cream. Lovely. Okay. I'm going to steal that.
Yeah. It's always the answer.
That. Okay. Ice cream. Okay. Fudge. I don't know.
Fudge on ice cream.
Mm.
Okay. Brownie with ice cream on the top. Now we're getting really close to what could be a truce.
Exactly. That could have ended the war.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Wendy Davies. I said your name wrong, Wendy. Was The Blacklist the first time you held a gun on a show, and was that gun as big as it looked on TV? I don't know the answer to this one.
It was the first time I've held a gun. I think it was the first time I've held a gun. Yeah. I've had some other weapons, but the first time I've held a gun, and indeed, it was as big as it looked. That was a... It was a 44, right?
I believe it was a 44.
Mm-hmm. It's been a big thing that's been debated. Like, was it a Smith & Wesson 500? Was it a 44?
I think it was a 44. I was told that it was the Dirty Harry gun. So if that's...
That's 44. 44.
I don't know. All I know is it's really big and it's really heavy. And who knew at this stage in my life, in this age that I am, that I would learn how to shoot a gun? That was a really fun working with, you know, the weapon guys who are great and also incredibly safe, working with them on how to hold it, how to shoot it, you know, how to get it, you know, because I just unfortunately shot Boz in the last episode, and that was the same gun, the same big gun, and how to, like, pull it up out of the car or get it out of my bag or whatever, and how to hold it and how to actually shoot it. That was a fun little lessons that one never thought they'd get to have in their life, but it was kind of cool.
And you took some flack for that. I mean, people were like, well, maybe I'm on Team Kaplan and I want Red to go down, but when you shot Boz, it was like the whole world turned.
Well, I know, honey. Yeah, well, yeah, and I don't blame him. I don't blame him.
Man's a hero.
I know he is. I know he is. And just a fabulous guy. Just really, really smart, kind, lovely to work with. And both of us were like, I can't believe we're doing this. We have to do this. But, you know, that's our job. So we do it, but even as a character, I tried to go, well, Boz, no, don't make me do this. You know, kind of tried to have a little humanity when I knew I was going to blow him away. So, yeah, no, that was a hard one. That was a hard one. Both of us had a big hug after that, I have to tell you. As Boz and Susan, we had a big hug after that. Or as Boz and Mr. Kaplan, I guess you could call it at that stage of the game. But, well, you know, the first episode I was on when I was introduced is when I met Boz. He was
the team, the detail, yeah.
We've worked together since the first time I was ever introduced in the show. I think that was the first time he was on the show too, I think.
Well, it was nice of you to shoot him.
Yeah, nice of me, wasn't it? Yeah. As I say, love and war, they're pretty close.
If you get him an ice cream with a brownie, I think you guys will be fine.
I think we have to have a brownie with two scoops to make up for that one. Yeah, I'm afraid so. Yeah, that was a hard one.
What was the last day like for you?
The last day? Bittersweet. Bittersweet, the last day of season 4. Yeah, it was the last day of their shooting season. So it was everybody's last day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was everybody's last day before they went on hiatus, and it was all of our last days, and I happened to there was a scene that they didn't get earlier in the week, and I wasn't supposed to work on that last day. I was supposed to be done. So I ended up having to come back on the last day of shooting, and it was everybody was, you know, just saying goodbye to each other. I mean, you know, I wasn't there the whole day long, but it was family, as I say, family.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if any of, you know, I'm not sure that they knew about season 5 or, you know, anybody that last day. I'm not sure when that all was settled or not settled, you know, because nobody tells anybody anything. Nobody
right.
wants anybody to know. No, everybody that you think would know doesn't know till the last minute. It was an interesting, but I think at the end of their season, they work so hard and so many hours at the whole crew, and it's a fabulous crew, and I adored working with them. I mean, the camera people, it's just brilliant, brilliant, fabulously professional people. So just kind of, and I had worked a lot more, obviously, on season 4 than I had previous, so I got to know them all even more this season. So it just, I can't think of another word but bittersweet.
It's a good word.
What I think they do brilliantly on The Blacklist is their character work, you know, for mm-hmm. their main characters. They really, as you were saying earlier about, you know, kind of tapping into if they think something's working or if they think somebody's got a take on something that they like or the fans like, that they'll go with that, they'll ride with it. And I think they're, what the character driven stuff on this show is pretty great.
With everything that's gone on, and you've had some great interviews and some great conversations. Yeah, C2E2, by the way, thanks for coming for that. You had a great turnout for that. A lot of fans asked a lot of questions.
Oh, that was so fun.
Oh, yes. Thanks for coming.
That was fun.
That was great. It was really your first fun. One, too, by the way, right?
You've never done that. It was my first one ever, and, you know, who knows if I'll ever do that again in my life. And I just had, I was nervous because I thought, God, I don't know what this is or what, you know, and I had a blast. Mostly thanks to you guys. You guys are so great on the panel discussion. You were just really handled that so beautifully. But even walking through the venue and meeting other people, it just was, it was fabulous fun. Had a good time.
Well, thank you so much for that. And thanks for coming. It was so good to have you out there.
People loved it. You know, my family is so much in Chicago. I know most of my family is still in Chicago, so it was great for me to be able to also go and visit my 100-year-old mother and get my sisters and family and nieces and nephews. And so it was good all the way around.
That's great. Of all that, of all the questions you've been asked and over and over and over, what is the one question you wish someone would ask you?
This fan base is pretty thorough. I'm not thinking of anything that I haven't, that I would want someone to ask me. The fans ask really good questions, really interesting kind of probing questions. So I don't feel that there's something that I wish someone would ask me. I feel like it's been done, but if somebody comes up with something that will surprise me, I'd be the first one to appreciate that.
Troy, you've been challenged.
I've been challenged.
Okay. I just threw down the gauntlet. There
That's
you go.
Right.
Well, this one's been asked before, but what is next for you? What is your plans, life after season 4?
I don't, you know, there's stuff out there. I don't know. There's some irons and fires and things like that, but I'm actually right now trying to plan a trip to Portugal.
Ooh.
So that's what I'm working on at the moment. What might come after that is a little up in the air at this point, but that's the life of an actor. And that's what makes it exciting and terrifying.
Well, just don't borrow a suitcase from Tom.
No, that's his suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm going to let him deal with that.
I got one. I'm gonna hope I can throw this question up. So, in regards to the show, your job, cleaner, of all the characters, the main characters in the show, who would be the easiest person outside of Red to clean up after in a murder?
I could think of so many. I mean, it was like, well, Cooper comes to mind.
Hmm.
I could see that.
But the mirror comes to mind, too. They all would have their own... They'd all be a challenge in certain ways, I think. I'm not sure anyone would be easy. I don't think they do a lot of things the easy way, that group. I think they'd all throw me a challenge, which, of course, I think I thrive on that anyway, so I think that would be a good thing. I'll take any of them on.
Well, except for Wrestler, right? Because he called the competition.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah, he's trouble.
Yeah, he is.
He's trouble.
Anybody whose hair doesn't move is trouble. That's the way I look at it.
No, he's charming and lovely, and he's so cute. Love him. But they all would leave something that would be a challenge, and it would be fun to rise to that challenge for any of them, I think.
I wanted to tell you before we, I know we got to let you go here in a minute, but before we do that, I wanted to tell you that for the longest time, I'm a huge fan. I don't know if you have you ever seen Pulp Fiction?
You know why I have never seen Pulp Fiction? Because I told you that I couldn't see violent films.
That's right.
I know that it is brilliant, classic, fabulous, and one day I will try to sit through sections of it while I have like light coming in the window streaming from the sun. But no, except that I have heard so much about that character that I've seen a snippet of that character. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think you could live in our world and not have seen some parts of Pulp Fiction at some point or another.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I have seen a little snippet of the character that... Okay, hold on. The character's name is going right out of my
Wolf.
Brain.
Help Wolf me. Is the cleaner in right, Pulp Fiction. Right.
Right, yes. So... if I saw it, or what do you ask?
No. I just wanted to know if you'd seen it, because he, up until you had really... Your presence had elevated on the show. He'd always been my favorite cleaner, and you have adopted that mantle, and Mr. Wolf is retired in my eyes. So I just want to let you know.
That is a compliment indeed, because that was so brilliantly played by him.
Mm-hmm.
That's a high compliment. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Absolutely mean it too. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, boys, I hope I get to see you again in Chicago someday.
Tell us. We'll come out. Come do another panel for something. Anything.
Deal.
We would love to see you again.
Yeah, that would be lots of fun. And it was lovely having dinner with you, too, and I'm glad that you're still married. So that's good. I'm glad you're still together. Nice.
We haven't broken up yet.
I'm sure working the way you guys do, you almost feel sometimes like you are, right?
I want a divorce.
Some weeks.
Working together as much as you do, yeah.
especially over the season. Yeah. Yep, definitely.
Yeah. I bet it has.
Well, it's been a year of firsts for you, Susan, for shooting with a gun, yeah, and first comic book.
Absolutely.
Books, first podcast. Thank you for letting us be part of it.
I still have not seen the comic book. I have to see the comic book.
Oh, you do? It looks just like you. It really does.
Does it really? I have to see this. I'm going to go have a martini now. Okay.
Have one for us.
All right. Good call.
All right, boys.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you.
Nice talking to you both.
You too.
Always.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. I hope you guys really enjoyed that. We had a great time talking to Susan. And for the people wondering what the wedding thing was, she brought it up. We weren't going to mention it because we're kind of like, well, that was dinner and we don't want to bring that up on the show. But since she brought it up, Susan mistook us for being married, because I don't remember what the reasoning was. Do you?
Well, we were at dinner with her and some other people, and she said somebody had mentioned the fact of, like, it was one of those. It's perfect for the blacklist, actually. It's a lexical ambiguity. Somebody had said, well, you're married, right? And we both of us answered yes. Like, of course we're married, right? We have our spouses and our families and our children.
Oh, yes, right. Because they were asking individually, like, you guys are married. Not together, just married in general.
Right. And Susan heard, you're married. And we said, yes. And Susan's like, oh my gosh, you guys are married? That's fantastic.
Yeah. And at some point, I think she talked us into feeding each other cake. I don't want to talk about it anymore, but that happened.
Yes,
so
it did.
She's a wonderful person, and she's really funny. Really funny. I think it's going to do it for this episode. Do you think so, Troy?
Absolutely. I hope you guys enjoyed it.
There's a lot of great stuff still coming. It's like the blacklist never ends. So be sure to come back. And thankfully, we have a season 5 to actually come back to. So that's great news. But that's going to conclude this episode, because we're going to come back next week with an interview from everyone's favorite, yet not so favorite character, depending on whether she was stabbing you in the back or the front or the side. We don't know. Yes, Annie Heise, a.k.a. Elise, a.k.a. Dammit Janet, will join us. So be sure to come back next week.
Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and join our Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, or discuss whether Mr. Kaplan should return in season 5.
Yes, dearies, you can also subscribe to the podcast in Apple Podcasts and Google Play, or listen from the website. But if you're really on the go, make sure you download our app for iOS or Android, powered by Spreaker. You'll also find all the intel and analysis about this episode by visiting theblacklistexposed.com. Big thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for always supporting us throughout the year. We really do appreciate it. It means the world to us. Don't forget to visit theblacklistexposed.com for all the info on this interview with Susan. And be sure to come back next week for Annie. And don't forget podcast awards. That information is going to be coming out in early July. So all this stuff, it's still coming. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. We'll see you then.
Later. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.